Hello, I'm Crystal Boyd, a member of the Robbinsdale Historical Society. On this episode of Robbinsdale Revisited, we step inside the legendary Terrace Theater, the extravagant million-dollar movie palace that put Robbinsdale on the map in 1951. Hailed by newspapers as one of the most beautiful theaters in America, the Terrace drew movie fans from across the Midwest and inspired glowing praise from Hollywood insiders, radio personalities, and national magazines. We'll follow the story of the ambitious Volk brothers, whose vision of luxury moviegoing included free coffee, elegant lounges, modern art, massive parking lots, and service so personal they once reran an entire movie for two late-arriving customers. Along the way, we'll explore the golden age of suburban theaters, the changing movie business, celebrity controversies, bargain matinees, and the way the Terrace evolved through the decades as audiences both in Robbinsdale and around America changed. So join me and the president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society, Pete Ritchie, as we find our way from the glamorous opening night to the final years as a discount multiplex. This is the story of the Terrace Theater and the unforgettable role it played in the life of Robbinsdale.
So, the Volk's new theater received rave reviews in local papers. The Northampton Post warned readers that words would fail them when they entered the Terrace. July 1st, 1951 spread in the Minneapolis Star claimed that theater men from as far away as Hollywood, California, were making hurried pilgrimages to Robbinsdale after they heard about the Terrace. Sidney Volk told Will Jones from the Minneapolis Tribune that free coffee would be served at every show. But that was just the beginning. Sidney was already dreaming about a new theater. He told Jones, "I'm going to build one someday that will be out of this world. You'll drive right inside, and an elevator will take your car away, and it will be parked. There'll be a big smorgasbord with caviar. It will be magnificent." So WCCO radio personality Cedric Abrams confided with his listeners, "A new landmark has gone up, and it made me gasp. The complete elegance of the lobby virtually stuns when you walk in. There is no other theater you have ever seen like the Terrace Theater." On August 4th, 1951, an issue of Box Office Magazine featured the Terrace on the cover and contained a 5-page illustrated article that praised the theater as the gem of the lakes. I guess that would just be Crystal Lake. We have Twin Lakes nearby, but...
So it's the 1950s, and this is all some great praise, but Business Week offered a slightly more skeptical appraisal. They said, "Last May, two Minneapolis movie owners pulled a stunt that made every other exhibitor in the area decide they had blown their lids sky high. In nearby Robbinsdale, Minnesota, William and Sidney Volk opened a movie theater that had cost them close to $1 million to build. Since television seemed to have put the movie business solidly on the skids, this looked like an elaborate way to commit suicide."
Ken, the hyperbole here is, you know, an orgy of movie theater building. They're committing suicide. We're just over the top. Sidney Volk brushed aside criticism and explained to local reporters, "Every home has a kitchen. Every home has a refrigerator. Every home has a freezer, but people still go out to eat. There are so many wonderful people in the world. You can't meet them by the television. You have to go out and talk to them."
That is such good advice. I feel like that's so applicable today.
You know, there's a lot of restaurants and there's a lot of refrigerators. A couple months later, Business Week changed their tune and noted the Terrace was doing a booming business, the likes of which most movie theater owners hadn't seen since before the war. In a follow-up article, Sidney Volk told Business Week that based on his Robbinsdale experience, he believed that the business had changed and realistic theater owners like himself had what the public wanted. Sidney put it this way, "Believe me on this point too. If a woman has been at home tending her kids all day, washing, ironing, cooking, it's going to take more than a television to keep her there at night. As long as we have women in the world, people are going to go out. Nobody ever bought a mink coat for his wife to keep her warm. The box office told the story, and Terrace proved to be a success."
What an interesting way to frame your business. Were they married? Were the Volk brothers married?
I don't know if Sidney was married. And he's the one giving advice.
Weren't there three of them to start with?
There were three. Julius bows out, I think, pretty early on. We'll get to it, but William's going to bow out soon, too, and then it's just going to be Sidney running the business. And so Downtown Theaters, we kind of talked about briefly before, they had a monopoly on first-run shows in those days. But first-rate movies were appearing at the Terrace as early as possible. The Volks claimed the Terrace was built to serve all of the metropolitan area of the Twin Cities, and people were coming in from as far as 50 miles away. A guest register contained signatures from 25,000 people. Strangely enough, we have that guest register in our storage closet.
I've seen it, and it's gigantic.
Yeah, it's a big one. I mean, there's no order to it because it's just people coming in, signing their name, putting their address in. I was told that they opened up the guest register first night of the Terrace. They put it over in a corner, and this guy just walks over and signs his name. There's the guest register. Oh, I guess I'll go sign my name. And Sidney was furious because he was not supposed to be the first one to sign the guest register. Sidney was. Or some celebrity, somebody, just this guy who wandered in off the street and went and wrote his name in the guest register. Maybe you shouldn't have put it out. So the Volks had a reputation for service, and a column called Hollywood sang their praises in the Lubbock, Texas Morning Avalanche. So somebody in Lubbock, Texas is writing about the Terrace Theater. Why? Gordon talks volumes about the Terrace Theater in Robbinsdale, Minnesota, just outside Minneapolis. Two brothers, Sidney and William Volk, own it. When you enter the theater, said Gordon, there's a counter in the foyer with an attractive young lady telling you the picture is starting and you're early, and would you like to go in to the lounge and be served hot coffee, donuts, or sandwiches with no extra charge? The night Gordon was there, two people came in late, and the show was nearly over, but the Volks ran the whole picture again just for those two people. Sidney said, we stay open until the last person leaves. We never want a dissatisfied person. Their business is the best for miles around. The theater has parking facilities for 1,000 cars and is built on 15 acres of land. So if you go to Minnesota, visit Volks, says Gordon. That would impress you if, like, two people come in late and they say, well, we'll run the show again for you. We're not doing anything. We'll just go up to the office and have a cigar. And so the theater had a great reputation. The Volks had a great reputation in the 50s. In 1955, the brothers bought out the old Boffertings Point service station and tavern that was located at 3561 West Broadway, and they demolished it to make way for another entrance to the Terrace Theater's ever-expanding parking lot. A couple months later, William Volk told the Northampton Post, long-range plans called for landscaping of the hollow behind the theater that included a shopping mall and a lagoon. I don't know what qualifies as a lagoon. A little piece of open water in the swamp?
Yeah.
They seem to have filled in around the swamp a little bit, expanded their parking lot, and put a little pond in the middle of it.
I'm trying to think if there's any equivalent to this today. I just can't think of anything this over the top for...
Well, the number of seats is kind of incredible. Even the best movie theaters today, they have these giant seats. They don't pack them in like this, you know? So in 1954, local Catholic priests, acting on their own initiative, asked the movie houses all over the Twin Cities not to play pictures on the Catholic Legion of Decency's condemned sea lists. The Terrace caught the attention of the group after showing... The Moon is Blue. Despite box office success, William Volk pledged not to play any more films on the condemned list. He later told a reporter from Variety magazine that the Terrace had seen increased Catholic support for The Robe. Robbinsdale's Catholic priest, Father Nolan, boosted the picture from the pulpit. Volk went on to say he believed that the cooperation of local Catholics helped the Terrace garner a record-breaking $10,000 gross during the film's first week. So.
And that's so interesting because they were Jewish brothers, right?
Yep.
Huh.
And one of the few things that I've seen advertised that was not a movie at the Terrace Theater was an opera. And they brought in a famous opera singer, and it was to raise money for settlers in Israel. And this was 1950-something.
I gotta say, The Moon is Blue sounds more exciting than The Robe.
Building on the rave reviews of the ultra-modern terrace, the Volk brothers looked again to Liebenberg and Kaplan to complete a $50,000 remodel of the Riverview in Minneapolis. Completed in 1956, the new lobby space felt like a living room and was graced with Herman Miller chairs and divans, Dunbar tables, McCobb stools, stunning draperies, and graceful modern lamps.
And then, 9 years after the terrace opened, Sidney Volk decided that it was time to kind of freshen up America's finest theater. In the television lounge, he filled it with rocking red plush seats and replaced the ropes with Honduran mahogany curls set in plastic and framed in walnut. What an interesting design choice. They had new carpet that was in three shades, covered the foyer, auditorium, and lounge. Window treatment patterns after the original designs by Edward Stone for the government building in New Delhi, India, were hung and framed in Belgian linen. A young Robbinsdale artist by the name of Keith Havens created 6 paintings for the ramps around the auditorium.
And we are still looking for those paintings. What we do have left over from the terrace that was kind of amazing is 3 little bear sculptures, and we've got all 3. 2 of them are kind of beat up, but one's in good shape. Yeah, they gave it a little remodel. I'm wondering if at this point, most people remember the interior of the terrace being red. It was originally green. This might have been when the color change happened, when the carpet changed. So in 1960, burglars smashed through the concrete blocks to get to the terrace's walk-in safe. Terrace manager Robert Hagen told the Minneapolis Star that the vault was used for records and files, and a wall safe containing theater receipts was untouched. I've read about the Nile Theater in South Minneapolis getting broken into, the Camden Theater. I think if there was a big movie, you knew that there was a lot of cash. If every one of those people is coming in paying a buck or so, there was going to be some money to be made. In 1962, William Volk stepped away from the theater business and opened a string of International House of Pancakes restaurants with a former owner of the campus and Varsity and Ritz Theaters, Sol Fisher. One of their first locations was built near the intersection of Bass Lake Road and Highway 52 in Crystal. Strangely enough, the two were preceded in pancake business by 2 other movie theater housemen, of Martin Lebedoff, who owned the Homewood Theater on Plymouth Avenue, and Charlie Rubenstein, who owned the Hollywood Theater over Northeast, bought the franchise rights to Uncle John's pancake houses a year later.
Why would you be so involved in the theater business for like 30 years and then flip into pancakes?
I'm guessing it's like, hey, Bill, you know what the margin is on a pancake? Pancake house seems like a good business.
I mean, I love a good pancake house, but they're not going to have these like mahogany curls and
no, it's not going to be. That's all Sidney, though. I think William was wondering what his brother was up to, sometimes talking to reporters and going over the top on everything. Many years later, that same International House of Pancakes is used in the movie Feeling Minnesota. Courtney Love is serving, you know, Keanu Reeves pancakes.
So William sort of splinters off to
He's on his way. A couple months after William's exit, Sidney Volk hired Liebenberg and Kaplan to remodel the Nile Theater in South Minneapolis, and they put in the soundproof party room and replaced the old crying room at the rear of the auditorium. The party room could be reserved for free. They were usually used for children's birthday parties, but groups of adults occasionally reserved one to yak and munch together during the show. Seats in the new Nile were bigger and softer and more widely spaced. There was an elaborate Italian and German lighting fixtures were installed, and a large ceramic mural executed by a couple of Florida artists extended through 2 stories through the upper and lower level lobbies. Sidney rebranded and advertised the Terrace, Nile, Riverview, and Camden as Volk Luxury Theaters, and that was the name they went by. During the 1960s, Sidney Volk involved himself in a variety of civic and business associations in Robbinsdale. He served for several years as secretary of North Memorial Hospital's executive committee. In 1966, Sidney served as vice president of the North Central Association of Theater Owners. Montgomery Ward's announced their plans for a new location to be built on the 13-acre lot behind the terrace in 1965. Completed a year later with a 2-level, a full-line store, eventually employed 500 people. Special services included optical department, hearing aid department, garden shop, snack bar, and the 120-seat buffeteria that I remember so well. Ward's also built a 24-car automobile service center adjacent to the frontage on the northeast corner of the property. In 1970, the Music, Peace, and Love festival film Woodstock opened at the Riverview. And so kids are standing outside with pickets and they're protesting the price. And one sign says, $3.50 is not in the spirit of Woodstock. And Sidney Volk, very apologetically for some reason, tells the Minneapolis Tribune, I don't want to charge that price, but I don't have anything to say about it. Warner Brothers set the price. In New York City, they're getting $5. I'm sure Sidney is thinking, why? How come I'm not getting $5 a ticket on this? Back then, people protested all the time.
So in 1973, Marlon Brando decided to decline an Oscar for his performance in The Godfather. And he sent what at the time was thought to be a Native American actress, Sasheen Littlefeather, to do the honors. And the day after, she announced to the Academy and the enormous television audience that Brando very regretfully could not accept the award, because he was protesting how Hollywood was portraying Native Americans in film. And the local newspaper columnist, Will Jones, told his readers there was little cause for offense, even if Brando chose an inappropriate occasion to champion a cause, and the Academy Awards had very little to do with the portrayal of Native Americans. Oscars had been handed out for years for reasons that had very little to do with the recipient's acting skill. Sidney Volk said moviegoers were having none of it. Volk told Jones he had set the film for a 3-week run following the awards show, figuring all the hoopla would bring in that much more business, but he ended up pulling the picture after just a week. It was Brando who killed it, Volk said. Nobody wants to see him now. It's the same with Jane Fonda. You can't give her away in my theaters. Yeah, I mean, I think at the time, so in the 70s, Brando was making a statement and working with, I think it's Sasheen Littlefeather, but I'm not sure how to say her first name. But I think more recently people have questioned her tribal background, and so the work that happened at that time is viewed in a different light.
But Brando is trying to say something,
and it's interesting that this kind of dovetails with those kids protesting, right? Like in the 70s, people have a lot to say and they're using public forums to do it, and Brando did have a message to get across, which he did, right? Nobody came to see the film.
Well, Sidney was a little bit annoyed. So an in-town theater used to be the biggest gold mine in town. Now it's struggling. The biggest problem is the shortage of films. The good ones, like Love Story, make money. But how many of those are there? And that's Sidney complaining about the movie theater business in the early 70s. William Volk passed away in 1973 at the age of 74. A year later, the Minneapolis Star reported that all 8 of the city's independent movie theaters were struggling to survive. There was stiff competition from newer suburban movie houses, and the big theater chains left many owners operating in the red.
And he's blaming it on the script writers, right? Not on the changing economic times. Or
yeah, it's like, we just need some great movies. Give me another one like Love Story. That one made some money. So Volk's pessimism was shared by owners of other movie theaters all over town. They remodeled their lobbies. They lowered their ticket prices. They improved sound systems. And they created smoking luges. So this is better than a smoking lounge. It's a smoking luge. It's a little area right there in the movie theater where you can smoke, because if you have to go out to the lobby to smoke, maybe you don't even want to see a movie. I want to smoke during the movie. So all of the Volk luxury theaters had these smoking luges. Neighborhood theaters are in trouble all over the country because young people have moved out and the old people stay home. In the mid-1970s, the Terrace made a variety of improvements and most of the auditorium equipment was upgraded. Sidney sort of enjoyed the twilight of his career at the Terrace, where he occupied the handsome second floor, interconnected offices of the brothers, so he got both offices. So the rooms were laced with custom millwork, built-in desks, and tall cabinets. There were gorgeous full-height corner windows. When business was slow or the mood struck him, Sidney would wander out into the hall and climb a few steps into a show through his own private entrance into the auditorium. In failing health, the Volks sold the Terrace to the Plitt Theater Company in 1979. Shortly after the ink was dry on the deal, work began on a 350,000-square-foot, 42-store enclosed mall situated between Montgomery Wards and the Terrace. The new mall snuggled right up against the back of the theater and wiped out much of the Terrace's view of Crystal Lake from the little sunken lounge. You used to be able to see the lake. I mean, you didn't have a startling view over this vast parking lot, But it was better than the brick wall that you got after they built Rainbow Foods right in front of the Terrace Theater. In 1980, Signe Volk put the Nile Theater up for sale, but he continued to run the Camden and the Riverview Theaters. The Camden was doing relatively well, and the Riverview was still drawing crowds, and it still draws crowds. I've been there whenever there's a big movie, all those Marvel movies, the line would wrap around the block for those. I just went to see the Hail Mary project there, and the line wrapped around the block for that one, too. So the Camden and the Riverview Theaters were still drawing crowds in 1981. Volk donated the wall space on the back of the Camden Theater for a mural celebrating the neighborhood's Showboat Days Festival. In 1982, Signe Volk passed away at the age of 74. A year later, the Nile Theater was demolished to make way for a nursing home. The Volk's estate continued to operate the Camden and the Riverview. The Plitt Theater did little to endear itself to the community. Shortly after, they took over 15 residents and three staff members from the Prospect Park Health Center, loaded into a Project Mobility. They got on buses and they went to see the film Joni. The movie was this personal story of a woman's fight to cope with her disability following an accident. When they got to the Terrace, the group learned that the Plitt Theater discount tickets that they purchased could not be used for this movie. They didn't have enough cash between them for the price of, you know, the full price tickets, and a staff member offered to write a check, and the new Plitt manager explained that the theater did not accept checks. And so the incident resulted in a few letters to the editor and daily calls to the Terrace. A month later, the management arranged for transportation, free refreshments, and a special screening of The Black Stallion for the Prospect Park residents that had been turned away. And a letter to the editor, penned by the staff members, asked that the abusive call to the theater regarding the mix-up cease, because they were getting them all day long.
What a difference, though, from back when they used to keep the theater open for just two people who came in late, and now they won't even accept a check.
But the Plitt Theater was not the friendly neighborhood Minneapolis theater chain. Plitt Theaters were this nationwide monster. So on Monday, April 30th, 1984, this was a big moment at the Terrace, something that my friends are all still talking about. But director Jonathan Demme and David Byrne of the Talking Heads came to Robbinsdale to introduce the concert film Stop Making Sense to a packed movie theater at the Terrace. The movie had yet to go into distribution, and Byrne was in residence at the Walker Arts Center. It was only the second film that had been shown to the public, the second time that Stop Making Sense had ever been seen. Byrne told John Bream of the Star Tribune that he felt bad about the Talking Heads skipping Minneapolis on a previous tour, and he wanted to make up for it, so this was his way. And I can see David Byrne in the Terrace. I knew about this show. I knew so many people that had tickets to this show. I wanted tickets to it so bad, but it sold out, and I think he came out and gave a little speech, you know, before it began. And if you've ever seen Stop Making Sense, for years it played down at the Uptown Theater as a midnight show. And what I loved about going to it is people got up and danced in the aisles. And from what I'm told, people did not remain seated when they saw it at the Terrace. In 1985, Plitt Theaters was sold to a group that included the Canadian firm Cineplex Odeon Cinemas. 2 years later, the operation of the Terrace was transferred to a Minneapolis-based Mid-Continent theater company. At the time, the growing local chain owned about 50 theaters in Minnesota and the Dakotas. Mid-Continent immediately decided that it was no longer feasible to have a full-time projectionist at the Terrace and began installing automated equipment. The theater managers took over the task of threading projectors between shows. The Movie Projectionist Union put up picket signs and started to protest. So Mid-Continent's vice president, Larry Kirschman, told the Minneapolis Star Tribune, "It seems to me that the projectionists have taken a beating in this town, cutbacks in union jobs by the UA and Cinemaland theater chains, of course. They don't take a stand against one of the big chains. They took a stand against us because so put upon the Mid-Continent theater chain. It's a little chain with just 50 theaters." In the same article, Kirschman went on to say that Mid-Continent would be transitioning the Terrace from first-run house to a 99-cent admission second-run theater. The television room was closed due to increasing vandalism, and I actually talked to a guy who worked at the Terrace, and he said, you know, they had some of the best seats in this little television room, and they were plush, and they were beautiful, and he worked there from about 1970, well into the 80s, when this is happening. you know, nothing bad ever happened in the little television room. There was never any problem. As soon as you get into the 80s, these kids are coming in and they're actually tearing the seats with knives. They're cutting into the upholstery, and he was horrified. And of course, I had a moment there where I thought, oh, I probably knew those guys. My generation was restless and weird, and vandalism was something they did. So the plush seats that sat there through the 60s and the 70s without a mark in them were shredded. The room was eventually converted into a glassed-in office. And in November 1987, it was announced the newly renamed Midco Terrace would be converted to a four-screen second-run complex. So Mid-Continent hoped to find a niche between, you know, the first-run theaters and the video rental market. And so plans were drawn up to divide the front and the back and split those into halves down the middle. So what resulted is you had the upper part of this stadium seating in the terrace. Remember, the terrace has 1,200 seats. And they divide that upper part and they get 300 seats in two theaters. You wouldn't really call it a balcony, but the back half of the theater turns into two 300-seat theaters. And that leaves the rest of the terrace is still a good-sized theater, still bigger than the Riverview, because you've got almost, so you've got close to 600 and then some seats down in that lower part. So it was still good-sized, and I went to see a couple movies there. It was a little sad to see the theater torn apart that way. However, they had recarpeted the lobby, and they did some things to make it look nice. So a year later, the new Midco Theaters started advertising 49-cent Wednesdays. So that's a cheap movie. Writing for the St. Paul Pioneer Press in 1988, architectural critic Larry Millett noted the theater was tired of watching movies in oversized shoeboxes and concrete floors, even as luxury was making a comeback in projects like Cineplex Odin's 2,000-seat Willow Creek Theater and a complex in St. Louis Park. The area would never see anything like the terrace again. Todd Frager, who managed the terrace at the time, told Larry Millett, "People around here really like this theater. It seems like every week somebody will come in here and say he remembers seeing a matinee here as a kid. There's no doubt that this theater is something special." Less than 5 years later, Mid-Continent recreated the terrace as a second-run discount movie theater. They switched the format again. The change was suggested by distributors, led by folks like Disney. There was some concern that there were only 8 screens left at Brookdale, and that wouldn't be enough theaters in the northwest suburbs to handle the annual flood of summer movies. So Mid-Continent's vice president says, "Disney came to us. Your numbers for families and children are very strong. We'll give you all of our product if the theater would switch to first runs." And so they looked at that and said, sure, I mean, Disney seems like a winner. If it's a financial bust, they could go back to second runs. But their intention was to turn into a first-run theater again. Terrace didn't show Disney films exclusively, but hits like The Lion King and Cool Runnings and The Mighty Ducks kind of gave the theater a second life. And in 1995, another theater chain, Carmike Cinemas Incorporated, acquired the Terrace and 64 other screens from the Mid-Continent Theater Company. The new properties make Carmike the second largest motion picture exhibitor in the United States. At the time, the second run theaters were still doing well in the Twin Cities. The Terrace hung in there for a couple more years. Basically, they started targeting African-American teenagers from the North Side, and they brought in what in the 1970s we would call blaxploitation movies, but this is a little bit later. So Vampire in Brooklyn, Higher Learning, however, it just wasn't enough to keep the place going. But the people that I've talked to that worked at the Terrace said they were bringing in decent-sized crowds. The crowds were a little rowdier. Things seemed to be going well, but Carmike pulls the plug on it. So in January of 1999, the last movie on the marquee was Meet Joe Black, The Siege, and Rush Hour. I remember going to see the Tina Turner story there. That might have been one of the last movies I saw when it was divided into three theaters. So in 2003, the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota listed the building at the top of its list of the most endangered historic properties. And we could spend a lot of time talking about why the Terrace is a historic theater. Just looking at pictures of what a movie theater looked like in 1951 and what the Terrace looked like in 1951, mid-century modern isn't the first thing that people want to save when they think of an old building. They want to save something like the Suburban World or the Granada Theater in South Minneapolis, like the State Theater downtown. Right about the time that people are talking about the Terrace Theater being closed, is it ever going to reopen, is the building going to be reused for anything, that's about the time that mid-century modern starts appearing in the vintage stores. And there just seemed to be a little bit of a movement to bring back this look. And the Terrace certainly had that look. And everybody was excited to save the Terrace there for a minute and see if we could find some use for it. Until Hy-Vee said, we're going to build a giant grocery store there. And then popular opinion kind of turned against the idea of saving this old building. For a minute there, for about 2 years, you know, the city council was on the side of trying to find a use for the building. The mayor proclaimed it Terrace Theater Day in Robbinsdale, Historic Terrace Theater Day. We at the Historical Society teamed up with a group of people that were interested in saving the building, and we got a grant, and we wrote a National Register of Historic Places application. And the plan was to present that to this absentee landlord called Blackstone that were out there in New York and say, you have this building sitting up on a hill rotting in Robbinsdale, but it can be on the National Register of Historic Places. About the time we got the application done, we're ready to approach the landlord about it, that's when they announced the new project to bring in the Hy-Vee grocery store. And so the Terrace went down, and we'll have a whole nother episode sometime about trying to save the Terrace Theater. But that pretty much brings us to the end of our Volk Brothers episode and the end of the Terrace Theater's days in Robbinsdale. We're actually coming up on the 75th anniversary of the day the Terrace opened. In the United States, buildings don't last as long as people, because we all know a lot of 75-year-old people, and they're still trucking right along. But 75-year-old buildings, 75-year-old commercial structures, even ones that are built of steel and concrete to last 100 years and cost $1 million in 1951, well, we're just going to tear them down.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
Bicycle into the city every Saturday to see our friends. Back home, sitting hand in hand, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends in Robbinsdale, in
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and the Rounders.
Oh, yeah.